phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This here is my show. Join up the chat room at scotthorton.org/chat. Got a good little community of dudes hang out in there during the show. Have for quite a while now. scotthorton.org/chat. You don't need a outside application, XChat or ChatZilla or any of that kind of thing anymore. You can just open up in a plain old browser window there. So you don't have to add anything to your boss's work computer or anything like that. scotthorton.org/chat. Come in and say hi. And now we go to our first guest today. It's our good friend Sheldon Richmond, Vice President of the Future Freedom Foundation and editor of their journal, The Future of Freedom, which you can subscribe for to at fff.org/subscribe. $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online, and man, it's worth it. All right. What should libertarians do is the title of your most recent piece here at fff.org. What should libertarians do? So I'll ask you, Sheldon, what should libertarians do?
Maybe I could have thought of a better title. I don't know. I kind of like it because, you know, there was a famous essay by James Buchanan, the Nobel Prize winning economist and all around, you know, generally a good guy, who wrote an essay called What Should Economists Do? So I guess I had that in the back of my mind. I was trying to say to people something that I think we already know, but I think we forget it sometimes, that we need to master the art of rhetoric, of persuasion, if we want to advance liberty. So, you know, any libertarian who wants to be an active libertarian, not rather than just a sort of a private libertarian, or to become good at persuading, because our goal is not to just be able to say to ourselves or even just say out loud, you know, the hardcore position on any libertarian, the hardcore libertarian position on any, you know, issue. That's not what it's about, right? Just being able to recite to ourselves, oh yeah, Fed, abolish it. Oh yeah, this, abolish it. That doesn't advance liberty. We need to be able to explain to people not only what the position is, but what supports the position. What's that come from? Because people, if people are totally uninitiated, they're not going to know what you're talking about. In fact, they're going to think you're nuts. And so the example I use is, economic regulation. If someone who knows nothing about economics hears you say, well, just get the government out of the economy, total separation of state and economy, they're going to think you're proposing that nothing take the place of something. They may concede it's an imperfect something, but if you don't understand how markets work, a free market person sounds like he's just claiming, just take away the only hope we have that the market will, in any way help people and let it just go wild by itself. Well, it takes economic knowledge. So we have to be good at explaining the basics, at least, of how markets work, so we can persuade people that markets run themselves. Yeah. With it, namely, the people, when they're engaged in mutual aid and social cooperation and exchange, that generates orderly market forces.
I may not be the best person at saying it, but I certainly know what argument must be addressed on that point. As always, it's the Great Depression, because everyone learns it the same way I learned it in seventh grade. I remember where I was sitting in class and everything, the way they teach it. The free market was just too wild, and uncontrolled and blew itself up, basically. And it needs wise stewardship from above. And that was why the American people and their wise leader, FDR, decided to create the New Deal to control the wild excesses of capitalism that lead us to these terrible ends. And so if you can't turn that myth upside down, forget it.
Yeah. No, that's true. And, of course, that was coming in most likely in a government school. And, of course, one reason the government has always wanted schools is so it could teach the young moldable children their version of history, its version of history, the official version, which always, makes the state the ultimate rescuer, right, and savior from the rampages of liberty, freedom. That's basically what the story is. You're absolutely right. You do need to explain that, and there are other things. That's the big one, but there are other things.
The robber barons too. You know that none of these guys did anything for anybody. All they did was take from everybody. And of course, a lot of that was true, right? The criminal cartels that control the railroads and all that.
The railroads were a creature of the state, right? Huge land grants given to special interests who were running railroads with lots of land on both sides of the track bed, and that was a huge favor, and that generated lots of land speculation, which was based in state privilege. And so you point out a very good thing, which I didn't talk about in this article because it was running on. Not only do we need to be able to talk about the basics of economics, which means we need to understand them first, but so we can speak about it plainly, we need to understand history. That'll have to be the next installment of the article, I guess. We need to know, we need to have an accurate story of what happened historically, so that we can explain it. Because you're right, when you explain the Great Depression, you're not just talking about abstract economics. You're referring to a particular historical episode, and you need to talk knowledgeably about it. It's not just enough to say, oh, it was the Fed's fault, so let's abolish the Fed. That's not going to persuade anybody who's not already on your side. And then, you don't need to persuade people who are on your side.
Right.
You need to reach other people.
Well, and it's not just the left. I mean, I think pretty much everybody in America has the basic understanding, as you outlined it, I think, really perfectly there, about, and not just because of the New Deal myth, but just generally speaking, you gotta have a government in Washington, D.C. to be the lid on the pot, kind of running, preventing something bad from breaking out somehow. And the fact that, of course, the U.S. government is the most violent force on the face of the planet perhaps only even reinforces it, because they wouldn't do that if it wasn't so necessary to keep such a dangerous world at bay all the time for us so we can live nice. That's how people rationalize it. They assume that must be the truth,
Most people are Hobbesians, even if they'd never read or heard of Thomas Hobbes. So in other words, they've grown up implicitly believing, because it's reinforced in so many places, that the government, prevents a war of all against all. And then, there's the additional points that the government prevents the marketplace from being in constant depression and being dominated by monopolies and low wages and high prices. So in other words, it's a broader Hobbesianism. The government is what prevents chaos in all kinds of ways, violence plus economic chaos. And people believe it. I mean, if you're taught that from birth, and that's basically all you hear, unless you happen to come in contact with libertarians or free market thinkers, then you're going to believe that because it's what you've heard all your life. So if a libertarian comes along to someone who's 20 or 30, and that's all he heard was the official version, and the libertarian says, you know what, the state should have nothing to do with the economy. In fact, that maybe the state should even disappear totally. The person's going to think you're nuts. I mean, you're going against the whole lifetime of, quote, learning that the person has just undergone, teaching him the indispensability of government regulation of the economy and other government activities. Why is he going to believe you just because you say, you know what, we don't need any of that, let's just get rid of that? They're going to think you have some malign motive, behind your bravado. They're not going to see it as some sort of reasoned position. So we got to give them the reasons, and we got to be good at it and patient and clear. And that's a challenge. I mean, this stuff is not intuitive. As I said in the piece, very few of us figure out how markets work by ourselves. I mean,
well, go ahead. You've got a minute and a half to explain.
Well, every libertarian I know, including myself, had to learn it from reading, you know, Hazlitt and Bastiat and Mises and Hayek and Rothbard and a whole bunch of other people. I didn't figure it out. And Adam Smith. Well, I have a minute to explain what, how markets work.
Yeah, sure.
This is worse than Twitter.
Well, then we're going to take a commercial and then we'll be back for another segment, of course.
Yeah. Well,
but no, I mean, well, let me put it this way. For someone, for the average person who looks at it, it's just crazy to think that you could just have no government, that that's some kind of ridiculous fantasy. You got a major premise to turn around there before you get, I think, into any real details of curves here and macro this, that, and the other thing, right?
No, I'm not going to do macro curves anyway.
Oh, and now you got no time. Now you got no time at all because the drums are playing. So now you got to wait. It's Sheldon Richman, everybody. The great Sheldon Richman. He's vice president of the Future Freedom Foundation. He's the most libertarian man in the world, actually. And we're going to talk with him more about libertarianism and economics on the other side of this break. FFF.org. Also, SheldonRichman.com for his great blog, Free Association.
Hey, all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. That's a little downbeat, isn't it, for the tempo of the show so far today? All right, well, Ray McGovern's coming up on nuclear war, so we'll play the metal for him later. All right, we got Sheldon Richman on the line. He's vice president of the Future Freedom Foundation, and we're talking about libertarianism. And now, okay, it's silly to ask you to teach all of economics in one lesson here, Sheldon, but let's talk about income inequality here, and basically what you already outlined, the idea as understood by a great many people, and I think this is expressed in the blockbuster new economics book that's even, you know, breaking into pop culture here, is that capitalism is great for people who are already rich or who are really, you know, talented enough to figure out how to really get rich, but it just doesn't work for regular people. Basically, screw them. That's the name of the system. That's what capitalism is. And so now you're going to try to tell me that, no, that's a misunderstanding. That's somehow not right when we see, you know, the desperate and weak and helpless everywhere. At the same time, we see people who just throw money away by the hundreds of millions on ridiculous bets, on luxuries and yachts and crap while people are dying, and it just doesn't seem right.
Well, I would say that that may be true of capitalism, but it's not true of the free market. In the free, you know, we don't have a free market. I mean, it's impossible to look at the last over 100 years, and you can go back further than that, and argue that this is a free market. I mean, the government has huge amounts of control and power over certainly the command posts, money and banking, for example, which has long had control of, and this goes back before the Federal Reserve was founded in 1913. So we don't have an open free marketplace. We've had all kinds of government measures to help the well-connected, the corporate elite, the people that had the connections. And so throughout American history, they've gotten tariffs, which has kept prices up, and imports artificially expensive, which hurts lower income people. We've had, like I said, money and banking controls. We've at a more local level, we have things like occupational licensing and permits and zoning that prevent low income people from starting their own businesses so they can get out from under the typical corporate employment or, get out of unemployment altogether and just employ themselves along with people, say, in their neighborhood. The funny thing is you never hear progressives. And I assume the author of this book, I think his name is Piketty, is that right? I think he's would count himself as a progressive. You have progressives, you know, bemoaning income inequality. But they never talk about the things that keep people from even getting on those lower rungs of the ladder, namely the things I just mentioned. Licensing, permitting, zoning, intellectual property.
Yeah, they want to give them jobs implementing those regulations.
That's how they can imagine government jobs for people.
Here's the tip off. I'm not saying they don't argue in good faith. But there's an odd thing about all the things they favor. They always empower politicians. They don't empower people. The things I'm talking about would empower people. Strip away all the rules that keep somebody from starting, being a street vendor. That's how a lot of people got going at an earlier period in history. They were able to get a push cart, or these days they could get it, say, a used car or used truck or something, and become a street vendor. But in city after city, there's tight control over street vendors. And some places like Atlanta, it's basically been turned over to a monopoly company. So, in the old days, you could get a used car and write the word taxi on the door and begin driving a taxi and start making money. And you had independence. You weren't working for the boss. You could make your own hours. All those roads, or most of those roads, have been blocked off. I mean, there's licensing for hundreds of occupations throughout the country. I'm not talking about being a doctor, although I don't think you need licensing for that either. I'm talking about things like being a florist in Louisiana. You can't be a florist without the permission of the government, which means without the permission of the current florists, because you have to pay money to go to a school, take classes, and then take the test, and the test is passed by is judged by the current practitioners. All this keeps people down. Why don't we hear Robert Reich, Piketty, all these people? Why don't they ever talk about things like that? All they talk about are things that empower politicians. Is this what's going on here?
Well, and it's interesting too, because somebody like Robert Reich, who you mentioned there. It seems like the answer is obvious. He doesn't want to admit that capitalism is the solution to the poor's problem. They need access to property rights. They need the ability to build up their own personal capital in their own life and in their own property, and have the ability, as you're saying, to enter into the marketplace doing this, that, or the other thing. Maybe have a decent interest rate so they could save for a minute. And yet, Reich is just a centrist Democrat, neoliberal, right? So he's supposed to be at least two cheers for capitalism, like Irving Kristol or something like that, isn't he? But that is the root of the problem, I think, right there, is ideologically, they don't want to admit that what the, like Jack Kemp used to say, what the poor need is capitalism. That's what they're lacking.
Look, yeah, but I think we have to break out of
the market, as you're talking. Break down the semantics. Go ahead.
Look, for historical reasons, I don't like the word capitalism. What we have today, I call capitalism, and most people call capitalism. I want the free market. I want the radical freeing of the market, which means none of this, all this background intervention, which only helps people who have already made it, and it gives privileges to corporations and big companies. I'm talking about things like, not only railroad subsidies earlier in the history, but highway subsidies. The interstate highway system is a massive subsidy to big retailers, cross-country retailers, and other people that move stuff along, because most of the damage to roads are caused by these big tractor trailers, but most of the repair cost is paid for by passenger cars. That's a subsidy. Instead of those products in the marketplace containing the true transportation costs, it's pushed onto the taxpayers. So that's a disadvantage to companies that don't ship long distance, more local or regional companies. And I'm not a localist by ideology. I just don't want subsidies to big national companies. Going back as far as, well, Lincoln, but even further back, there was a self-conscious attempt to create a national market. I mean, this new book by Rich Lowry about Lincoln praises it, but it's not something to be praised. Lincoln was trying to create a national market. Now, most people would say that was a good thing. Yeah, we needed to have a national market, but it was full of government. The government was spearheading it, which means it was distortionary. It wasn't the result of free cooperation and exchange on the marketplace, where the market prices actually determine what got built and what the projects were. The politicians determined it. And that's
the American system, right? Henry Clay.
It goes back to Henry Clay. It goes back to Alexander Hamilton. Most of America's rulers have this idea in mind. And this is what Reich is defending. But, they love the 1950s. They like the John Galbraith 1950s, where you have big corporations, big labor unions, and big government all sitting down at a table and dictating to us what happens. That's not the free market. I will call that capitalism, but it's not the free market. So when Reich says the free market has failed, He doesn't know what he's talking about, or he does know what he's talking about, but he's being disingenuous.
All right, now let me change the subject from economics for a second when it comes to what libertarians should do here. I had a big fight with Justin Raimondo about Rand Paul. I just can't stand Rand Paul. He makes me so mad all the time. And Justin's argument was, shut up, this isn't about you. This is about our society is on the cusp of complete totalitarianism here. Outright lawless fascism, real martial law. Not this, you know, sometimes a little bit here and there, SWAT raids here and there, but for everybody, all the time, kind of total state, Snowden revelations type of society. And we have to fix it, and Rand Paul's the best we got, and we need a massive popular front of left-right libertarian and anybody who wants anything like the Constitution as compared to what's coming next, whether the Constitution is their libertarian dream or not. And I wonder what you think of that.
Well, what I like to say is, put not your faith in any politician. I think anybody that does that is bound to be disappointed. First of all, Rand Paul said plenty of things already to deflate any hopes. I mean, he said we got to be tough on with Russia, and his immigration position is bad. But you know, Justin may agree with him on that, so he wouldn't see it as bad, but I do. I just don't see that as the route. I don't think that's going to get us to liberty.
Could there be an emergency bad enough? His example always is, and it seems like a good one. The socialists and the communists in Germany refused to make an alliance against Hitler. And I think it was the communists who said, well, after Hitler, us. Well, they got 60 million people killed, and then they got to rule half the country, but only under the domination of the Russians, and it sucked. And so, great political strategy there, to not do what it took to keep the Nazis out. And at this point, we're talking about Hillary Clinton. She's not much less dangerous, you know what I mean? Right? He's got a point. I'm trying to concede a little to him.
Yeah, well, I'd be a little careful about the historical comparison, the analogy. I'm not quite sure we're in the same position as the German people were pre-1933. Look, it's a low bar when people say that Rand Paul is the best we have going. It doesn't take much, right? The one-eyed man in the kingdom of the blind is
right.
You know, he wins, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah.
I just don't think. This is my, you know, personal view. If people want to work for him, fine. But I just don't think that kind of politics is the vehicle that's going to get us where we want to go. I mean, you know, even if he got in, you know, he'd be fighting a Congress the whole time. And so what would happen? He'll get blamed for any problems. I don't know. You know, I don't like to be the raining on people's parade. But I just can't get excited about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling you, but I'm glad I got a chance to ask you. All right, and I'm sorry that we're out of time, but thank you very much again for your time.
Okay, Scott, anytime.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Everybody, that is the heroic Sheldon Richman. He's at the Future Freedom Foundation. He's the vice president there, fff.org. They got so much great stuff there. I mean, they got 25 years worth of great stuff there, really. 25 years worth of archives of great libertarian articles by the best libertarian writers, fff.org.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.